You can do it. You can do it. You can do it. Start with this, a podcast featuring Night Vale creators Joseph Fink and me, Jeffrey Craner. Each episode, we discuss a topic, then give you two assignments, something to consume and something to create. Start with this repetition. Your writing needs a message. Maybe that message is political, or moral, or funny, or satirical. Maybe that message is personal, or just weird. I'm not here to tell you what's a good or bad message. I'm just here to tell you, your writing needs a message. Conveying that message is up to you. When I read, I like something indirect like poetry, metaphor, dream logic, magical realism, something that keeps my brain aloft. When I watch theater or listen to podcasts, I like something more direct, something that preaches, like this. Your writing needs a message, and one of my favorite techniques as both a creator and a listener is repetition. Centering on a point, spiraling out from that point, but always circling back to the point. Preachers and songwriters and performance poets use this approach regularly. Their writing has a message, and they make sure to keep that message in focus by repeating it. Each iteration is slightly different in its velocity, in its momentum. Each time that repetition moves the energy forward, drives home the point, makes sure their listeners don't lose it, because repetition signals importance. Repetition helps memory. Repetition feels like a song. Your writing needs a message, and repetition can help. I'm Jeffrey Craner, here with Joseph Fink. Let's get going. Hi, Joseph.
Hi there.
I really love repetition. It's one of my favorite things to use, especially when I'm writing for voice rather than on paper, just because I think there's ways of using percussion in your vocals or using something that's almost like a song. It makes me think of a good song. Or growing up in Baptist churches, it makes me think of preachers. And there was something about driving the momentum and the energy by using repetition of a moral or a thought.
Yeah, repetition is something that definitely you encounter it in different ways in almost every form of art. The human brain likes patterns. And so every form of art, I feel like, plays with repetition in its own way. Certainly, as you were talking about, anyone that performs out loud, performance poets, theater artists, preachers, you learn very quickly that there's almost a magic power in repetition. It can make anything feel important.
It's like any kind of a snake oil salesman or something. Like, I think of that classic trope or whatever, but the idea of you just want to keep repeating the benefits of your shitty product, or even if you have a good product, you want to keep repeating those benefits. You want something that's memorable, something that people say aloud. And
yeah, if you have a product and you tell everyone it's healthy, sound, and safe, and it does all these things, and it's also healthy, sound, and safe, and you should buy it, and it's healthy, sound, and safe, eventually, no matter what, some part of you is going to be like, that sounds healthy.
And sound and safe, too. Yeah, those are all three things I really love. I should get this product. But yeah, I think those two things are intimately linked. And when we're writing, the whole point of us writing anything is that we want to tell a story. And the only way people are going to keep reading our story is that they feel attached to it in some way. And some of that is in they feel connected to the point. They feel like the point of your story, the message of your story resonates with them. So I sort of broke down the idea of repetition devices into just five major ways in which I use them or notice them. And so I thought we'd cover them. But if you think of something else that is missing from this, feel free to add it. I don't think this is comprehensive. So thinking about repetition devices, I'll just say them first and then we'll go in detail. One is like using repetition to review an idea or a plot or a concept, reviewing a scene. Two, for rhythm. Three, to help with comprehension or memorization. Four, for emphasis. Like if at first you don't succeed, try again. And then five, for using it to disorient or displace the reader or listener. Repetition can do that. So one, talking about using repetition to review an idea, I thought immediately of the he said, she said motif. I think Rashomon is everybody's go-to example of telling a story many times from many points of view so that people have something to see and then see again from a different point of view. It gives you different analysis of something.
Yeah, I mean, this even goes back to like speech 101, you know, the whole idea of tell them what you're going to tell them, and then tell them what you told them. Like, in an even more basic level, this is just repetition is a really good way to make sure people get the point. Whether that's Rashomon, where it's this story repeating over and over the same moments. I think also of Fun Home, the graphic novel, yeah, and then musical Fun Home.
Yeah,
which has this kind of circular quality where she just circles back over and over these same moments in her relationship with her father till those moments start to have this vast importance. They have this like ritualized quality because she just keeps telling the same stories about her father and over. But it also, yeah, like it can be as simple as just when you're trying to write 1,000 words that delivers a message, being sure to be like, I'm here to tell you about this. Here it is. I told you about that. It can be as simple as that.
I do a lot of crosswords. I love crosswords. And I do get into these loops where I will, especially you kind of get down into one little corner of the crossword and you just can't solve it. And then you're left with like 4 or 5 clues that are unanswered. And you'll spend, or I'll spend several minutes just staring at all of them being like, I know this answer. And you just keep reviewing it. And every time you kind of go through another process of like, what's another way of thinking about what this adjective, you know, or the synonym of this is, or something along those lines. And I think about shows like a movie like Groundhog Day is a perfect example where the protagonist is actually aware of the repetition and they become the audience placeholder for reexamining that character's life. Most recent example, obviously, is Russian Doll, mm-hmm, on Netflix. And then the TV series that I was telling you about the other day that's on Amazon, Undone, is another one that uses constant repetition for reanalyzing what's really going on by repeating time over and over. Let's talk about rhythm. I like the musical quality of repetition, obviously, in songs. As you know, one of my favorite country and western bangers is "Parked Out by the Lake" by Dean Summerwind. If you have a Spotify account, please look up "Parked Out by the Lake" by Dean Summerwind and listen very closely to the lyrics. They're really wonderful.
It's one of the better lyrics I've seen for a popular song in quite a long time.
Please immediately go listen to that. You know, and in that song, it's meant to be funny. The repetition of just the same lyrics over and over. But you know, I was thinking, I thought immediately of the opening of Tale of Two Cities, because it's the repetition of it was this and it was that. It was the best of times, it was the worst of times, it was the age of wisdom, it was the age of foolishness. The repetition of not only of the dichotomy of two of the items in each sentence, but also just repeating that sentence, I think, like 7 or 8 times, that of the same structure of that sentence. It really gets you into the sway back and forth between it was up and it was down, it was left, it was right. And it feels musical to me when I read that, even on the page. It feels like there's some bounce, there's some drum beat happening.
Yeah, and that, I think, even probably intentionally echoes one of the more beautiful passages. It's I don't think there's that... A lot of translations lose this, but the Book of Ruth has this really beautiful bit of poetry in it, in which Ruth is leaving behind the tribe she lived with to join the Israelites. And she gives this speech to the man she's marrying. Is it the man she's marrying or the mother of, I think it's the mother of the man she married who then died.
Sure.
I believe it's mm-hmm. been a bit since I read the Book of Ruth, but she gives this beautiful passage that's like, where you go, I will go, where you eat, I will eat, where you dwell, I will dwell. And it ends, where you die, I will die. And there I will be buried. And it's that same, series, that rhythmic series. In Hebrew, it actually is even more repetitious because Hebrew is one of those languages that you can embed parts of the sentence into the word. And so that whole passage is just a series of paired words where it's like, you will go is one word, and then I will go is the other word. And it's just those series of paired words down the page, kind of sketching out a life. And it wouldn't, I think, have that power without the repetition. I mean, obviously, like, this is a fairly well-known idea, the idea of parallel structure, which is just repeating the sentence form you just did.
Yeah.
But it can be used in some powerful ways.
I like the artistic experiment of the Book of Ruth having been written on an Excel spreadsheet. I just sort of like to imagine that that's how they did that.
If I don't know how to find it for y'all, but you should do some Googling and read some stuff about the linguistics of the Book of Ruth, because it is actually a fascinating It's very short and it's full of a lot of wordplay and puns and weird bits of poetry that generally doesn't come across well in translation, but is just, it's fun to see humans thousands of years ago doing puns and like.
You brought up the other point about rhythm that in repetition that I really love too, which is not just the rhythm itself, but when you choose to break the rhythm. And so in Ruth, where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. You finally get a culmination of that phrase. We finally bring it to a head.
Yeah, one of the real benefits of rhythm is it establishes a pattern for the listener or the viewer or the reader, that then when you break it, that break provides a lot of power. I think about like the disintegration loops that are these short loops of music that gradually fall apart. And it's precisely because you hear that same 5-second thing literally 200 times that by the time it starts to static and other glitches start to enter into it, they have a lot of power in the way that they wouldn't if you hadn't heard that loop so many times.
And when I think just in writing and storytelling, you're building up tension in somebody. You're building up, sometimes you're just playing to people's expectations, right? You don't want to always remove what the reader wants, but you don't always want to play to what you think your reader wants. You're telling a story, so you have to have a back and forth of those things. And part of it is you need this prolonged thing of building up something and then paying it off in the end. Actually, when you and I were driving back from New York yesterday, and I'm trying to remember which song it was, but somebody online did a remix of...
It was Electric Feel by MGMT.
Right.
There is a remix on Twitter that just, they just never go to the chorus. And so it's just the slowly building song that never pays off.
And that's the, which is amazing. It sounds profoundly irritating, but yeah, there's that payoff in that rhythm, you know, of building up some kind of momentum and then it just never quite goes anywhere. I wanted to talk a little bit about comprehension and memorization. A lot of this is, I think about this on a smaller level. I mean, it's not very often that as a writer, as a fiction writer, that you're trying to train your readers or your listeners to remember something specifically. But I was thinking about, you know, in Welcome to Night Vale, we have a character that we refer to constantly as the faceless old woman who secretly lives in your home. And then there's the men who drive crates out into the middle of the desert, and one is not tall and the other is not short. And it's the repetition of those ideas that kind of create placeholders for names. There's something where you have that, it gives you a way to more profoundly label something than just naming somebody Stephanie or something to that effect. It gives you a more detailed glimpse at a person. It's renaming a thing in your own words. It creates that more memorable effect.
Yeah, I mean, we do that a lot in Night Vale with taking simple phrases and then just repeating them over and over. And I don't know if this directly relates to comprehension and memorization, but definitely that kind of repetition gives a weight to that phrase. That phrase starts to mean something, even if it doesn't really.
Yeah.
But just by the 10th or 11th time we've heard that phrase, we start to identify with it. It starts to feel like a part of the identity of whatever we're describing. To keep the examples from Judaism for some reason, is the Passover Seder. I mean, a phrase you will hear constantly throughout is, and kind of throughout a lot of Jewish stuff, is you were slaves in the land of Egypt, at least in my tradition, usually translated in that exact wording. Mm. You were slaves in the land of Egypt, and that repetition of that phrase, not only is it about comprehension, but it's about embedding it in your identity. It's about, you repeat it so many times throughout your life that it becomes this like sense of identity, that part of your identity is at one point you were this, and so you should remember that. And so that is the power of repeating language.
The other thing in repeating that language, especially if you can come up with something that's evocative in some way, that's memorable, it feels unique enough, not just a cliche or a common phrase, but something that feels unique to your story, you can bring that back, not necessarily just as a naming device, but as a recall of an emotion or a feeling. Janina in Within the Wires in the first season used a phrase in describing one of the characters as having a cloud of dark hair. And then we've repeated that phrase a couple of times with other people. And it's not to say that they're the same character. It's just simply to give you the same emotion of that moment. It's to create, to send you back. It's just it's a callback. Mm-hmm. I was thinking this idea of memorization, I think where it pops up most is in the mystery genre, where you need to You need to set clues early on. You need something that when you call it back later, somebody remembers that you did it. But you can't be obvious about it in the moment. You can't just say, oh, I looked over and I saw a gun that matched the gun that we think was in the murder over on his nightstand. Like, that immediately says, oh, this guy is a major suspect. You need to do something different. Like, the example I sort of just sketched out, I don't know if this is a great mystery or not, but you might have something like, you might have a describe a crowd on a train platform. And in the process, you might describe lots of different people in the background. But one particular man might be extremely late looking and he's looking at his pocket watch and then he's tapping it. And you might write into the text, clack, 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 a couple of times. That creates sort of an irritating effect or just a rhythmic effect. But then maybe later in the book, when you need to pull back this really random ass character that has no real development and you need to make them major suddenly, you can have the protagonist here, the clack, 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 written out all as one word in italics or something that immediately brings us back to that moment on the train platform. So that was the repetition that I was thinking of as using callbacks for memorization.
Yeah, human brains are so attracted to patterns that we will remember them in a way that we don't remember other things.
Mm-hmm. The next one I wanted to get to was emphasis. I think this is where I use repetition the most. This goes back to my preacher background, or not me as a preacher, but like listening to fire and brimstone type preachers. Because the thing about fire and brimstone type preachers, when you're a kid and you're not there to really discern what is morally right or wrong, you're just there to take in whatever somebody tells you. And they are super convincing people because of that rhythm, because of the energy that they bring to that. And when writing for performance, I really love bringing on repetition as a form of emphasis to keep driving home a point, to keep coming back to a point, to keep reiterating that point. You know, and in more minor ways, a lot of the ways of emphasis are, you know, he is very, very attractive. You know, you can kind of create that just to keep emphasizing to a point. And also, he's handsome, dapper, charming, handsome. Did I say handsome? You know, to humorous effect, but it's another form of emphasis. My question to you, though, in thinking about emphasis is like, how do you know when you push it too far? Like, how do you know if you're being too didactic or too simplistic, as in he's very, very, very handsome?
That's a great question, because it's one of those ones that it's very difficult to answer. A gut feeling question. A lot of it is gut feeling. Like, it's similar to being like, how do you know when a melody you're writing for a song is good? And the answer is you've heard a lot of melodies and you've written a lot of melodies and you're like, this one feels good. But it's really hard to be in technical terms. Here's why this particular melody I'm writing is catchy. And I use that example because there is, as you say, a lot of repetition is about musicality. There is a huge connection between any sort of linguistic repetition and music. Music is generally repetitious. Music that never repeats kind of generally sounds awful to us. There's a reason that there's generally a verse melody that comes up a bunch of times and a chorus melody that comes up a bunch of times, and it's because it's built around that repetition. And so I feel like it's a lot of the same gut level thing of, does it sing for you? If you say it out loud, saying it out loud would probably help, but does it feel like it has some rhythm? And if you're at a point where you're like, I don't know if it does, that's a fair point, but that's probably just means you need to read and listen to a lot more stuff. And when you hear someone repeat in a way that seems good to you, you don't even have to dissect it, but you should like listen to it a few times and be like, okay, what are they doing here? Like, what am I feeling? And just try to get a sense of that feeling so that when you write it yourself and you read it out loud, you can be like, yeah, this feels, that has that kind of that same feeling.
I always think about momentum, you know, using especially the first chorus, bridge type structure, especially in pop music. But there is usually in songs like that, there's a key change, usually on the second iteration or third iteration of something, which creates momentum. It creates a vector, it creates a direction for something to go. And even if the words are the exact same, the speaker or the singer has changed their tone in some way. And I think about that in writing too, as in if I were to repeat the same phrase again, the second and third and fourth and fifth times I say it, where am I in my feelings at that point? So the reader, where do I want them to be in their feelings? Is it an increase in urgency throughout? Like, help me, I'm injured. And then other things happen. Help me, I'm injured. Help me, I'm injured. There's an urgency that builds. And sometimes it could just be a thing where you say, I love you very much. and other things happening, I love you very much. And then by the eighth or ninth time somebody said it, it's lost a lot of the feeling because of the things that have happened in between. It's, I love you very much. And you no longer feel that. So having a direction or momentum is something I feel like for my own writing, I'm always sort of looking for to make sure that it's repeating to a place. Finally, let's talk about displacement or disorienting the listener or the reader. Using music again, I think about dance music, modern dance. I think there's just kind of a running gag that most modern dancers have done a piece to either Steve Reich or Philip Glass at some point in time. And and there's the common joke about the repetition of Philip Glass music. But the thing about those is that we don't really experience Steve Reich in terms of chorus, verse, chorus, verse, or in terms of even phrases or keys, or even really an immediate feeling or sensation. Like if you just hear a couple of seconds of Steve Reich or Philip Glass, it may not evoke anything immediately other than irritation if it's something you're not used to. Over time, there's like a slow evolution in the music that these guys make and the repetition of what they're doing. And it's a much slower burn. And over time, you realize, wow, I've moved and I haven't realized I've moved. There's something meditative about it, something trance-like about their music. And I think that's where you use repetition to lull somebody into something else. You disorient their sense of time and their sense of place.
Yeah, bringing this to language, we've talked, I think, about how when you're writing language, you kind of, especially for the page, but also for performance, you sort of set the time frame using the language that you can stretch and compress time. And you can do this literally by like writing a character being like, Bob walked into the store. 10 years later, Bob would die. But today, Bob is in the store. And you kind of have jumped back and forth that way. But you can also, if you have this like strange repetition to the language, you can start to stretch it out or compress it depending on how the repetition is done, but you can kind of affect the sense of time for the person experiencing that language.
Yeah. I think one of the best examples in writing words is really just in the form of like mantras, right? Like when you have a mantra, it actually physically affects where you are. Mantras and breathing exercises we use a lot in a lot of meditative exercises to help bring your body to some level of calm or some level of concentration of something to that effect, and is another way of slowing time down. Going back to the Russian doll example, there is a disorienting nature to the repetition early on in that show. When you first realize what's happening, it may take the second or third iteration to get what's going on and to see how everything has changed in between. And I definitely found that show delightfully disorienting in that way, to use that repetition to change your expectations very subtly, constantly.
Yeah, you mentioned like mantras, and this is definitely a technique used, I think, a lot in religious texts to bring us one final time to Judaism. I think about the prayer Kol Nidre, which is a prayer done on the night of Yom Kippur. It's literally the service is named after Kol Nidre. So it's the central prayer of what is arguably the central holiday of Judaism. It's done three times in full traditionally, and it is a long prayer, and it takes a while to do it three times. It's this way of kind of setting that prayer aside and giving it power is being like, we're going to carve out the time to do this language three times in full. It kind of hits a lot of the points we've talked about in that it sets those words aside. It makes them feel more and more important the more time you carve out to listen to those words over and over.
Let's take a break. And then after that break, we will come back and we will give you your assignments.
Sounds great.
Mm-hmm.
Hello, Joseph here. I have two books coming out this year. Seriously. May 11th, 2021. The first 10 years, two sides of the same love story. So there is a love story that happened behind the scenes of Welcome to Night Vale between me and Meg Bashwinner, MC and tour manager for the live Night Vale show. In this memoir, we recount the first 10 years of our relationship, year by year, without consulting each other beforehand. It's a funny and romantic story about how differently we experience and remember our lives. Then on July 20th, 2021, The Halloween Moon, my first ever novel for ages 10 and up. Esther Gold loves Halloween, until the year that Halloween night just won't end. even she doesn't want Halloween to last forever. No matter your age, if you are a fan of what I do, I think you're going to love this book. Get these books wherever you get your books.
And we are back. Let's give you some assignments. First, to consume.
So your consume assignment is the podcast Song Exploder, specifically Song Exploder episode 28. Song Exploder is a podcast that every episode picks apart a different song, looking at how it was written and how it was recorded. In this case, it is the song The Commander Thinks Aloud by the band The Long Winters. They talk with John Roderick, who is the person who wrote and sang the song. It is a beautiful episode. I tend to, when I'm recommending people Song Exploder, this is the episode I play them. And it uses repetition in a couple different fascinating ways. One is musically, there is a story about how the drum track was done for that song that involves using repetition in this fascinating and kind of mind-blowingly technical way. So that's sort of the technical musical aspect of repetition. And then there is this key moment when John discusses a repeated lyric that he wrote and his decision on why he wrote it that way and why he repeated it. It's a heartbreaking episode. And that repetition of that one phrase is really the heart of why it is a heartbreaking episode.
It's a fantastic episode. If you haven't heard it already, I'm very excited for you. So this is your create. I want you to come up with a 3 to 10 word phrase. No more, no less. Be brief, and it doesn't matter the content of it. Don't worry about whatever your story is going to be. Just find a phrase, actually, that we do this all the time. Just find something that sounds good to you and doesn't sound like a phrase that maybe even exists in the world right now. It could be weird, or it could be make total sense. Just get a phrase written down. Don't think too long on it. Now, you're going to write a 200-word story. It can be a monologue, a story, a poem, a song, if you want, if that's your thing. And I want you to use that exact phrase at least 5 times. If you can fit it in more, that's great. It's only a 200-word story, but see what you can do. Go for more if you can manage it. And as you use it, I want you to concentrate on each iteration's meaning. When you repeat that exact phrase, what does the second iteration do that the first did not? Where are you in the story now when you're repeating it? What does the fifth iteration do that the third did not? What is the movement of that repetition? Does it move your story forward? Does it emphasize your point? Does it create a lull or rhythm, a disorienting nature for the reader? Is it building on some feeling or idea? Just think about what those repetitions are. Don't worry too much about how detailed your story is or how well you landed. Just think about the repetition and what that's doing to your 200-word story. So those are your assignments. Have fun with those things. Have a great time with those things. Have a blast with those things. And that's all for this episode, but your assignment is just beginning. Head on over to startwiththispodcast.com to join our membership community. Becoming a member allows you to share your assignments with other listeners, talk about what's sparking your creativity, and find future collaborators. Plus, you'll be able to ask follow-up questions about this and future episodes and gain exclusive access to episodes where we answer those questions. Membership is just $5. That's only 2 jumped turnstiles on the MTA. We can't wait to see what you're working on. Start With This is a production of Night Vale Presents. It's produced by Julia Melfi, editing by Grant Stewart, mixing by Vincent Cascione, theme song by Joseph Fink. If you'd like your own cover of the theme song featured on this show, email us at startwiththis@nightvalepresents.com or post it on our member message board. All other music is by Caged Animals. Find more at cagedanimals.net. Very special thanks to Adam Cecil and Christy Cressman. Check out nightvalepresents.com for more information about this show and all of our other shows. Thank you for listening. All right, and we will leave you with this. It's one of the more popular inspirational phrases that we all know and love, which is,
if at first you don't succeed, try again.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Alice Isn't Dead is a horror thriller road trip from the team behind Welcome to Night Vale, and starring Jessica Nicole of Fringe and Night Vale. A truck driver searches the country for the long-lost wife she thought was dead, but Alice isn't dead. If you love American Gods or Stephen King or Night Vale, you'll love this show. The entire series available to binge now wherever you listen to podcasts.